Davis is probably lying, and Greta Garbo is probably crying, while Robert Taylor is locked in her dying embrace. Chico and Groucho and Chaplin and Lloyd are all super. Sweet Mickey Mouse, Shirley Temple, and dear Jackie Cooper.
Let's go to
the movies. Let's go see the stars. I'm joined in studio by our resident movie reviewer, Big Kev, Mr. Kevin Suarez. Kev, good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
Thanks very much for joining us. So, what are we talking about this week?
Well, we're primarily going to be talking about A Quiet Passion and Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. But we'll just quickly mention Cars 3 and Transformers 5 because they're the big names, you know, everyone wants to check out this week. So Cars 3, I don't really think it's a movie really for the kids. There's a couple of themes and a couple of scenes as well that the kids probably won't get. It's more of a conceptual film, you know, Lightning McQueen versus retirement, rather than Lightning McQueen versus a baddie. So I think the little kids probably won't sort of understand the themes of retirement.
My understanding is that's actually the Disney or whoever's doing it, their most profitable property.
Yes.
Cars. It makes all this money off of its merchandising. Okay, so another sort of excuse to sell us merch.
Yeah, basically.
Speaking of which, what else have we got?
Transformers, The Hunt for More Money. And again, explosions, robots. Although in this case, they decided to throw Sir Anthony Hopkins into the mix.
Terrific
maybe,
actor.
Maybe the only good thing about the film.
Maybe a secret Transformer.
I wish he had his own spin-off, because that would be definitely more watchable than what I saw. Transformers 5, if you like action films, give it a miss. There's better action films out there, but if you just want something to switch your brain off and eat some popcorn to, then maybe this will be your thing.
All right, so what else have we got this week?
So, A Quiet Passion is a film starring Cynthia Nixon and Emma Bell playing Emily Dickinson.
I understand this is a biography film.
It is a biography film. So I actually found the script to be really great for at least 2/3 of the film. Very witty as Emily Dickinson tries to combat sexism in, I think it was the Victorian era, because she really wants to be a poet. But in that era, the women weren't really allowed to do that much. Mm-hmm. They weren't given the freedoms that they have today. And so it's primarily about her struggles to become a very popular poet and up to her moment of death. And I found the script to be very witty. There were a couple of jokes in there that I just absolutely loved. I love wordplay. And so as a result, it was the sort of thing that I found enjoyable. But about 2/3 of the way in, then the tone took a really dark turn. And then it also, because it also portrayed her life with illness as well, seizures, getting diseases and so on. And it does have a massive contrast to the beginning of the film, because it's roughly in like three acts. When she was young, when she grew up to be middle-aged, and then when she was on her deathbed. And so I didn't quite enjoy it as much, because then like the entire tone of the film, the script, the acting just took a very different approach that I didn't find as enjoyable. And other than that, like there are a couple of scenes, I don't know if they're doing it for pacing reasons, but there are a couple of scenes where nothing happens. Literally, the characters are in like some sort of a like living room, and they just stare at each other for a good minute and a half, and it's just people just staring at each other. And I'm like, okay, I don't know if this is just a bit of padding, if they're just trying to, you know, stretch out the time to 2 hours or something. But I was like, this is kind of boring.
Well, I guess when you get a biography film, that's just a slice of life right there, sitting in a room staring at other people. That seems to involve a lot of my day. The Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. Now, I'm actually quite looking forward to this adaptation. It's not one I've ever seen put together on the theatre, but I've heard so many good things about it. I'd actually quite enjoy watching this adaptation. What did you think?
Well, it's one of those films that was actually a theatrical play. This was put on at the Old Vic, so don't think it's, you know, an actual film. It was a theatrical performance done by Daniel Radcliffe, well, starring Daniel Radcliffe, done in the Old Vic in London, and then they filmed it and showing it around the world, including Sydney.
I didn't even know it was Radcliffe in this one.
Yeah.
I mean, my most famous example of that one, I know they did that for Phantom of the Opera, and I know we've spoken about other adaptations, but Phantom of the Opera, probably the most famous one of a theatre adaptation put to screen.
Well, I wouldn't I know I've been using the word adaptation, but it's a bit incorrect. It's basically just a theatrical performance put on screen. But yeah, it adheres to the theatrical conventions of really good acting to counteract the fact that there's very minimal props. And I quite enjoyed it as well. But the thing is, the conceit is a bit hit and miss as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are aware of it, it's or not, the conceit is that Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, as they pronounce it in the play, you know where they're from, right?
Mm, yeah, of course. It was Shakespeare's Hamlet.
Yes.
Hamlet, I think, yeah.
Yes. So basically, the whole play is them trying to escape Hamlet, not the character, the play itself, right? And I didn't. Sometimes I like going into a movie completely blind, not reading the plot, because sometimes they spoil a bit too much of my enjoyment and the film for me. So I didn't look at the plot, and I didn't realize that was the conceit. And so for me, for a good half of the film, it was just a couple of people talking about existentialism, about free will, and I'm like, I'm not entirely certain what's going on here. But once I read what was the plot, which was that conceit that I just mentioned, then everything just clicked into place.
Mm.
And then, like, the script, it started making sense. And as well as the actions and the acting and discussions they were having. And I ended up loving it because of its crazy idea. I love weird things like that. I don't know, meta concepts like that. I like it. And I'm sure you do too, right, Sean?
Yeah, actually, a big fan. And of course, I think this one's drawn a lot of comparisons with Waiting for Godot, which is another very existentialist play, which I just loved. I do remember a performance of that one and studied that one quite thoroughly and did definitely enjoy that one. So I've always wanted to see it at a performance of this particular play.
Pardon?
I've always wanted to see a performance of this particular play.
Yeah.
So,
so did I. Ever since I grew up studying drama, so yeah, I'm on the same boat as
Excellent.
Well. But yeah, other than that, like, the script can sometimes spend a bit too long on the idea of, oh, free will. Do we have free will while we're trying to escape, you know, the play? And it didn't really make the concept that obvious to me, at least. So that's the reason why I was a bit confused and unsure what's going on. Again, it's one of those things that people are probably going to watch it and not get it, or they're going to watch it and love it.
Mm.
And at the end, I ended up enjoying it.
Excellent. Well, Kev, thank you very much. Big Kev, our resident movie reviewer there with a couple of ones you could go along and see. This one, A Quiet Passion, and Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. Sounds fabulous. If you like a little bit of theatre, I think a really fabulous one to get along to.